and welcome to Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
And I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you by Rasheed Wallace, who on this day in 2022 is surely looking through the Los Angeles housing market, as he is now an assistant coach of the Los Angeles Lakers under Darvin Ham. Katie, it's always awesome when we have present-day Sheed news to bring in the podcast. We were texting about this yesterday. Obviously, it's important in the UB world for Sheed to have now joined an NBA bench. What was your response to the news, Katie?
I was pretty happy, I gotta say. I was pretty excited. I think I said to you, let's wait till it becomes official, you know? But I guess rumors are now official, you know what I mean? Like, that's what it seems to happen. Rumors and leaks pretty quickly become the real deal, or are the real deal. And I have no reason to think Darvin Ham would steer his old buddy Sheed, you know, in the wrong direction.
Yeah. I mean, look, the Lakers seemed like a nightmare place to be if you are a coach last season. Just ask Frank Vogel what he thought of the whole experience. But if you're not kind of in the line of fire like the head coach would be typically, maybe this, Katie, is a pathway for Sheed. Not that I'm rooting for Darvin Ham to lose his job due to Lakers bullshit, but this does move Sheed one step closer to being a head coach in the NBA, which I think is what we all need, because when coaches yell at referees, it's very fun. Do you think there's any like reticence on the side of Sheed to be a head coach because of the day-to-day interactions with the people he hates the most?
No. I think you get to a certain point, right? And you're like, well, this is the pathway I want to take if I want this job, you know? He also seems like a pretty cool cucumber, so I don't think he lets that stuff get to him too much anymore. And I don't know, as like an assistant, you're like beholden to your head coach, right? And your head coach then hopefully looks out for you. Obviously, this hasn't been the case historically, especially in recent years. I think there's been some real lunatic head coach situations, but for the most part, your friends, you won a championship together. You know, I feel like you can feel like this person's got your back.
I would hope that there's going to be a supportive environment in LA for Sheed underneath Darvin Ham. I do hope maybe one day Darvin Ham misses a game for like a good reason, like, oh, he's having a child, or he's going to a graduation or something like that. And Sheed gets to coach for one day just to see the referees cower in their boots when Sheed is there on the sideline screaming ball don't lie and, you know, pointing out their various flaws. Rasheed Wallace is going to come up again today, Katie, as in the final segment of the show, the segment we're trying out this week. I'll burn the surprise now. We're bringing back Sheed or Speed. This time it's Sheed or Speed 2 Cruise Control. Of course, the game where I pull quotes from Rasheed Wallace and or Speed. We're going to play Sheed for Speed 2 Cruise Control later on in the show, and it's going to be a very good time. We also are going to talk today, Katie, about Pat Riley, who had his end of season press conference yesterday and was kind of a big dick. And look, this is par for the course with Pat Riley. That's kind of his whole thing. But I don't know, something about what he had to say about, in particular, Kyle Lowry and some of the other guys on his team after the Heat's very valiant Game 7 loss to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals, that rubbed me the wrong way. And I have some gripes with Pat Riley. I don't know, they might be inspired by the fact that Adrian Brody most recently played him and he's an annoying fellow at times. It might be the fact that he was coming after my boy Kyle Lowry. But either way, we're going to talk about Pat Riley on today's show and whether or not the sort of limits of the coolness of Heat culture have been reached over the course of the last couple days here. Before we do that, though, Katie, the NBA Finals, they're going on. We should probably talk about those very quickly. I truthfully have barely watched them. I had them on in the background for game two. I was in Edmonton over the course of the weekend seeing my friends who just had a baby and meeting their baby. She's very cute. It's adorable. Just a nice, good weekend for the soul. And part of the reason it was good for the soul, not just the baby cuddles, was the fact that I was not watching the Boston Celtics and the Golden State Warriors very intently. So I'm kind of diving into game three a little bit fresh and not having been tainted by the first two games. But Katie, you've been been watching. You've been writing a wonderful series of pieces over at Dime as well, turning the NBA Finals into a television series, which was fantastic. Katie, what have your been impressions of the finals so far?
I don't mind them. I don't think you need to be such a hater just for the sake of sounding like you're a really cool guy, Sean. I think it's been fun. I think it's been like really fast. Like the games are going so quickly. Not a lot of timeouts, not even down the home stretch, which is interesting. Just like I wouldn't. Maybe the Warriors by virtue of the fact, I guess, just of their shooting. But I wouldn't really peg either of these teams as like the paciest bunch, you know, especially when you look at like Boston's defense, like that can take a while, like by nature of good defense, it's supposed to. But these are quick games. So they're not really arduous to watch. They're really like call and response thus far. They're kind of figuring each other out in real time. The Warriors do have that annoying thing of always coming back in the third and playing a really good third quarter. So I don't know. I guess the Celtics have to figure that out. But the nice thing about it is I don't really care who figures it out. I still think the Celtics are going to win. But everybody looks really good. It's playing really well. Derek White is like a secret little villain. You know, Draymond's getting into it with guys in the last game, as I was kind of waiting for him to do. Something's up with Klay Thompson. Like there's a lot of intrigue. So I would be enjoying them if I didn't have to write about them. And I mean, I don't have to write about them, but I will say writing about them in that way has been weirdly hard. Like it's hard to write about basketball and not mention basketball or any of the kind of like, you know, game recap tropes you or I have definitely used in the past.
I'm the king of wording. Tropes. I'm a very bad writer, Katie.
None of that kind of just like referential, like in-game referential stuff. That's been a bit hard. So like those are fun, but like they've been a challenge. But that's okay. It's early June. I feel like it's a great, great time for a challenge.
So your description of the finals, I think, you know, I'm not like against watching the rest of the series. I'm not upset that I missed the first two games, but I'll check out game three for sure on Wednesday. But the way you just described it kind of sums up my feelings about a very popular television show, which is Breaking Bad, a show that I rewatched about a year and a half ago. And look, my sort of standing take on Breaking Bad is that it's a very, very good show. It's got everything you'd want in a television show, the writing, the cinematography, the character development, everything you want. But it leaves you feeling real shitty after you watch it, and I am never going to watch it again. It is a great show that I hate. I kind of feel like maybe these finals, just from that description, are working towards, if we're going to tie in the TV thematics here, maybe working towards one of those types of shows, which is undeniably very good, but makes me want to scream every time I watch it. Kind of similar to Ozark as well, I would say.
I've only watched a season of Ozark.
Okay,
but why would a game that you have no affiliations to make you want to scream or feel? I just feel sleepy when the games are done because they've been late so far because they've been on the West Coast. But I don't feel bad after watching.
It's because I hate the Boston Celtics, Katie. I really can't stand the Celtics. I can't stand Jason Tatum. I know he's very good, but again, like he's just kind of like this soulless good player who does corny ass things all the time. Has he texted Kobe during the finals yet? Did I miss another Kobe text that he took a screenshot of? Mm-mm. Oh, okay. No. Well, it really is. It's a Celtics thing, and it's just never going to change for me. I just don't like the Boston Celtics or anything they're about. And so it becomes very difficult for me to wade through. It is very much like, I understand that, like, you know, Vince Gilligan is a television genius when making Breaking Bad, but also the show makes me want to cry because it's so like just punishing. And it's just not for me. So I'll watch the finals for the rest of it, I guess. But I can't say I'm like, even with your flowery description of what it's all about, I just can't find myself really getting juiced up for it. But I'll watch it because what the hell else am I going to do on a Wednesday night? Katie, with that, let's move into the thing we're talking about this week, shall we? Another thing I find to be grating, just going through all of my grievances on this podcast today, Katie.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun for me, I have to say. Real, real good time. This is just Sean complaining. I really love this show.
We're going to come back to the other side. Don't worry, we're going to lighten things up with Sheet at the end, but we're going to talk about Pat Riley coming up in just 1 second. All right, it's the thing we're talking about this week. And this week, Katie, we're going to talk a little about the end of the season for the Miami Heat and Pat Riley's comments about said end of the season in his end of year press conference that went down on Monday. Before we dive into that, Katie, you're, of course, a big Miami Heat appreciator. I, too, am an appreciator of some of the things that they've got going. In particular, I've really become a Jimmy Butler acolyte. I think he was incredible in the postseason. And, of course, Kyle Lowry is a wonderful, wonderful master of being incredible. But they lost. And when that happens, for a very good team, it leads to sort of internal questioning and sort of thinking about what comes next. And Pat Riley had some comments after the season. But yeah, before we dive into that, I totally lost my train of thought. Thoughts on the end of the Heat season? I know we recorded after they had already lost, but we didn't really talk about the end of the Miami Heat last week. So we can tie it in here, a bit of a post-mortem on Miami, because again, I think you in particular are a massive Miami Heat acolyte. And I, again, have sort of migrated some of my feelings towards the positive side of the thing, especially when it comes to some of their players.
Yeah, that series was kind of sad. I thought we could talk about this. That series was kind of a bummer because as much as I wanted the Heat to advance and I want that Heat team to win a championship, I was a little bit worried that if they made it to the finals, their legs would fall off, you know, like they're really hurt. Like they're really, really hurt. So I thought it was just not really going to be like a fair contest, you know. I don't know. Like I personally would be like, oh, is it a waste to get there? Probably professional athletes would say no. You know, it's important to get there even if you don't make it very far, even if you get swept. I think they might have gotten swept. I don't know. Anyway, also, who knows what's going to happen? Sometimes the finals just goes topsy-turvy and everything turns on its head. But it was a bummer to see them go out the way they did. Everybody seemed pretty, I don't know. I feel like everybody took the blame for it equally in their exit interviews, you know, like this is a team that does sort of take accountability, which, is going to be something I mention after when you get into this screed against Pat Riley. But they do take ownership and accountability for the things that have happened. And I think they all expressed a fair amount of disappointment, you know, in themselves and the team, but like also the, you know, how they, like the part they played in the team. So, I mean, it's a bummer, but I don't think there's any reason why they can't be back there next season.
I just don't know why there seems to be such a dire mood around it, Katie. Like this Heat team, I think, was pretty obviously less talented than that Celtics team. And you could even argue maybe even less talented like the Sixers team they beat in 6 games in the second round, especially when you factor in that they were all extremely injured up and down the roster. And to get to Game 7 against the Celtics and then almost win Game 7 to me feels like it should be celebrated more than like the sort of, I don't want to say it's been like downplayed necessarily, but kind of has been. Like everyone seems like they're like, well, it wasn't enough. And like, I guess I'm always on the side of, they did a good enough job. Good job, everybody. Back pats for everybody. But the Heat are obviously not wired that way, as we're going to start talking about here. But to your point, they did kind of feel like, you ever play a video game, Katie, where you expend all of your health points trying to get to the boss fight, and then you just got nothing left for the boss fight, and they just kind of smack you down? Kind of was what would have happened, I think, had they made it to the finals after sort of battling through what they'd battled through physically. But to the Pat Riley point of it all, he goes in his press conference yesterday. He has some comments about Bam Adebayo and how all of the shooters on the team should give half of their checks to him because he makes their life easier, which I could maybe buy that. It's talking down Tyler Hero, so I think that's funny. But also the comment that really kind of stood out to me that really made me upset was his comment about Kyle Lowry. He was asked about Lowry's conditioning. He, of course, was dealing with a hamstring injury all the way down the rest of the season. And Pat Riley said that he would have to address his conditioning issues going into next season. Quote, "The bottom line with me, as far as hoping you can get the most out of a player, is that you have to be in world-class shape. You just have to be." Katie, Kyle Lowry is known, I think, worldwide for his rotund nature. He has used his ample posterior to carve out space and back dudes down and keep dudes from backing down for many, many years. He also has notably slimmed down over the course of the last half decade or so. Like that has been a through line of his development and his success into his mid-30s. And he also spent this season, A, missing a lot of time because of some personal things that were going on, which we don't really have any clarity on, but he missed enough time to suggest that, hey, that was probably something real serious going on with Kyle Lowry. And he had a hamstring injury in the postseason. I don't know if you can chalk that up to the lack of conditioning when you're a 36-year-old point guard. It might just be what being a 36-year-old point guard is all about, which the Heat should have known signing a 36-year-old point guard. So for Pat Riley to go on and have these comments about Lowry, who was instrumental in Game 6 in the Heat just forcing a Game 7, was also very good in Game 7 as well, after looking like he was lost in the wilderness for the previous month because of the hamstring injury, battling through that, like falling on his ass a million times and barely standing up and then continuing to play, I think this is really misplaced criticism from Pat Riley on Kyle Lowry. And to me, this has kind of gone through the barrier, past the event horizon of like what Heat culture is all about. And this just feels like it's Pat Riley being a dick and is just not really like identifying the issue. They signed a 36-year-old point guard. This just comes with the territory, I would argue. And I am mad at Pat Riley for being a dick about it. What say you, Katie?
I mean, look, it's twofold. Like, Riley did not explicitly call Kyle Lowry out of shape. And I think you have to go back to what Kyle said in his exit interview, which was like he called this whole season a wasted year. So I think the point being is that Kyle wasn't in the kind of in-season shape he normally would be because he missed a lot of the season for personal reasons, for injury reasons. And I think just by virtue of that, literally, he is not in the kind of shape he has been in past seasons. And I don't think Kyle Lowry would disagree with that. That's kind of all I took from it, is Riley pointing out the obvious. Like, I don't think he was, this wasn't even like a Nick Nurse style thing where he's like throwing somebody under the bus because he hasn't had a conversation with them and he wants to put like a little bit of fire under them. I think Kyle Lowry would probably be the last person to disagree with it. Like, just the statement kind of at its most like literal truth, you know? And I don't think that, I mean, like, saying someone has to be in world-class shape, I think, is also kind of willfully vague in Kyle Lowry's favor. I think that is just like Pat Riley putting a blanket kind of framing around the franchise and the verbiage and the wording that like everybody ascribes to them for years. Like, this just, you know, I feel like that's just branding. So again, like, that was not a surprise to me. And I think just like, you have to also take into account player autonomy in this and just like a person's autonomy. Like, I don't think, like, I do think Kyle Lowry ascribes to the quote Heat system, or else I don't think he would have gone there. Like, I don't think so, like a statement like this like hurts Kyle Lowry's feelings. You know, I think I didn't really read it as a dig or untrue. And I think it's weirder not to ascribe Kyle Lowry any agency in this situation, to be honest. Like, I think sometimes it's more reductive to treat things in terms of binaries. And I think even when people think they're being very sympathetic and supportive, you know, like not treating athletes like isolated bodies that we talk about without context, which is obviously a gross thing, that can somehow sometimes be even more reductive because you remove from them the agency of like, maybe they also feel like they're out of shape. Maybe they feel like they didn't have the season they wanted to have. I'm sure Kyle Lowry looks at this season, a season where he again went into, talked about like he knew what his future looked like. He knew it was looking more finite. He left the Raptors because he wanted to be on a team that looked like it could contend now. Like, that's always been the onus for him, right? Like, he wanted to win a championship this season. There's a lot of reasons why that didn't happen. Some that were completely out of his control that I don't think he's beating himself up about. But like, the other stuff Yeah, like when you can't contribute or like be there for your team in the way that you want to be, in the way that we know Kyle Lowry typically likes to be. I think that like this statement isn't too far off. The whole other side of that is obviously like Pat Riley is a known lunatic, and like it doesn't, you just kind of have to laugh at some of this stuff. Like you go through the rest of that presser, like he's like, you have to have, he's like, the dragon's still in me.
The I weird could do more push-ups than you.
He made about his wife and like running it back out of context in a romantic way. Not correct. That was the thing that threw me for a loop the most only. But everything else is just like, this is just Pat Riley. Like, I don't think it's like, I was actually surprised. And I think I get it because like, I'm also protective of Kyle Lowry. But I think to a degree, there's like a Raptors worm in your brain a little bit that's like,
oh, telling almost certainly. You there's no that, doubt about it.
That this is like, this is the worst. This is not even the worst thing anyone said about Kyle Lowry. Do you know what I mean? Like, it isn't. And I think those two probably had a conversation, and that's what you have to fold into it as well. Is like, they've definitely talked, you know, since before like Pat Riley had this presser, and they will talk after it. You know, like you can't like take out the relationship that they've certainly established with one another as like two competitive weirdos.
All very apt and well-made points, Katie. And you know, to suggest that I have worms in my brain, 100% accurate. There's no doubt about that either. I guess I find the whole Heat culture thing extremely grating, just kind of in a regular day, and when it's all kind of just spewed from the mouth of the Heat culture setter himself on a day, like it kind of just all sort of feels like a wave of like psychosis flowing over you. And I guess my problem too is, and look, I guess, you know, you make a really good point about the wanting to be compassionate towards the player thing, maybe going too far in taking away Kyle's agency in this whole thing, right? And like, you're right in that nobody willfully signs with the Heat expecting that it's going to be like a chill, fun time where there's desserts after every practice. Like, that's just not how they operate.
I mean, sometimes there are. Jimmy Butler is nonstop posting like breakfast pastries, like his in-house catering. Like they still eat a lot of food. They just work out like, I don't know, like 8 hours a day or whatever.
Are we sure they eat it, or they do like the chew it to get the taste then spit it into a bucket type thing? Like, I could see that totally being what happens in that locker room. But I guess it just, especially when a guy was like clearly playing hurt, and this I even kind of bridges into a new thing, and I think Heat culture probably sort of perpetuates this sort of like athlete brain thing as well, which is, I'm just going to play even though my body is broken, even though it's probably not a great idea. And look, you know, all these guys, again, agency, do what you want to do with your body, whatever. But I also think there is like an element of ghoulishness to sort of look at a guy who was hurt and playing through very clear injury and potentially putting at risk his future in the NBA. Look, he's 36 years old. Maybe this he feels it was his last shot. So it was sort of like, hey, yeah, let's just do this and, you know, deal with the consequences that come. But this happens all the time in other sports. It happens with Joel Embiid, and he's being like lionized for playing through a broken face and a concussion when like, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe we shouldn't like bestow valor upon dudes who play through injuries that are obviously hurting them and potentially causing long-term trouble. That part of it also kind of feels like something that Heat culture might, you know, perpetuate a little bit more. We saw Jimmy Butler playing hurt. We saw all sorts of guys playing hurt. Tyler Hero tried to play hurt, just couldn't because he was so hurt. Like, it's just all like, do you find that at all? Like, are you sort of at all thrown off by the Heat just seemingly like, yeah, get out there, play, go nuts. You're hurt. Your conditioning's not great, but you're hurt. Go nuts anyway. It just feels like it's kind of you're arguing both sides of the thing if you're Pat Riley and the Heat, right? It's, well, you got to be in the best condition, but also if your body is completely betraying you, get out there still. Again, player agency, there's lots of layers and nuance to this, but I feel like the Heat sort of ethos might inspire that sort of pushing your body to the edges that probably don't need to be pushed to type of situation more than others.
No, because everybody does that. literally, you never hear, like, I don't know why it's surprised. I don't like it, and I don't necessarily agree with it, but, like, all you ever hear about after, like, a season is over and, like, in these guys' rear view is, like, how collectively hurt the team was. Not just how injured they were, but they're like, oh, yeah, like, so-and-so is playing with, like, X amount of fingers broken, or, like, you know, they had, like, their like, ankle brace was just, like, keeping their ankle from, like, spilling out of their, I don't know, not really speaking well to my, like, knowledge of all the stuff that keeps those things together. But basically just, like, really, really beat up and extremely hurt. Because I think it's such a understanding of you're at this point where the runway is just shortening and you don't know when you'll be back there again, and you got to do, like, the mentality is you have to do everything you can to win, right? So I don't think that that's a thing where Spoelstra, I like Spoelstra as a coach. I actually think he's a very compassionate coach that is, like, nonetheless on the same wavelength of, like, how the Heat play and want their players to play. But I don't think he'd be putting somebody out there if it was like, okay, well, if there's, like, an 80% chance you land on this foot, you're never going to walk again or something, you know? And, like, you know, I've not done a lot of research in the sense that I'm, like, an academic in this, but I have, like, written substantial stories and spoken with experts whose job this is entirely, who say, like, oftentimes the more dangerous thing is to take players out cold or to not let them play, and then, like, to trust them if they say, it feels really weird, I can't, or, like, it's going to feel weirder if I don't, because then next game, it's actually going to be worse for me. So, like, it's a moving science, right? Like, it's like, there has to be more research done on it. It's a hard thing to study because athletes are in, they're, like, never not working in their careers, right? Like, the season is on and then the off season, they're mostly training. You can't get guys in for a study, for, like, a 6-month study, because they don't have that kind of time at this level. So usually the studies are done on, like, retired athletes or younger athletes. So in this kind of prime, there's no data. You don't really have it. It's just observation and trust and working with the trainers. And, you know, as we talked about before, like, player autonomy. So no, I don't think at this level, people who are playing hurt are playing hurt under duress.
Yeah, look, this show apparently is me coming with gripes and grievances, and Katie very, very astutely knocking them out of the park.
I just think, I will just say, like, my criticism about this is, like, it's so, and this isn't just you, Sean. I'm not trying to just, like, come down hard on you, but, like, we get into these exact same arguments, like, without fail. They are, like, beats that we hit in the season because they're top of mind for people, like, at that time, because it's coming up. But, like, this kind of shit is top of mind for people. This is some people's whole jobs. You know what I mean? And I don't just mean the athletes. I mean, like, the trainers and also, yeah, the academics who study this kind of stuff, because they care about research that will help further athletes' careers and, like, you know, extend career longevity, which is what I want too. I'm not in favor of people playing and, like, banging their bodies up to the point that they can never, that their careers are going to be shorter. I think we should want longer careers for athletes. I think that's just going to make the game so much more rich and nuanced and just, like, generally a lot better, more compelling a story too. I just get so, like, frustrated sometimes with the like, goldfish brain of, I don't know if it's, like, fandom or, like, media or, like, criticism or whatever, but, like, if you are that worried and concerned about it, dig a little deeper. Don't just, like, use these kind of same canned arguments over and over. It's bad. It's good. Like, it's not just one or the other. So that's what I mean when I feel like sometimes, to me, the binaries of sports and classifying them as such is what frustrates me the most.
It is not exactly a medium that invites nuance, even though it probably should invite the most nuance, because there's a lot going on. All I'll say, my final thing here is that Pat Riley, as much as Kyle Lowry knew what he was getting into with the Miami Heat, Pat Riley knew what he was getting into with Kyle Lowry. And if Pat Riley isn't going to appreciate the tank ass of Kyle Lowry, I feel like he's missing out on something. He's missing out on a richer experience of life, and I wish for the best for him, and I hope that he comes around, has an awakening as to the virtues of Kyle and that thick ass. all right, Katie, let's move into the segment we're trying out this week, which is a game I have devised. It is Sheed or Speed 2 Cruise Control. It's coming up here in just 1 second on UB. All right, Katie, we have reached the segment we're trying out this week. And this week on the podcast, we're bringing back an old favorite. You may remember we played a game called Sheed or Speed, combining two of our favorite things, the film Speed and Rasheed Wallace, into a segment where we took quotes from the movie Speed and quotes from Rasheed Wallace and tried to figure out who said what. Today is the same, but we're going with the sequel, maybe the worst sequel in the history of sequels, Speed 2 Cruise Control. It's Sheed or Speed 2 Cruise Control. Katie, first off, thoughts on Speed 2 Cruise Control?
Honestly, I think I've only seen it once. It's not a movie I ever felt I had to revisit. nope. Nothing against Sandra Bee, but like, you don't have my man Keanu in it. Like, obviously I'm a Bullock fan because she was phenomenal in Speed. She's a good actor. She's a great actor. Gravity gave me a lot of anxiety, but like, you know, great canon otherwise of work. I was a little bit upset. I just couldn't get into this one. Certainly not a comfort film for me.
It really hadn't like managed to screw up if you got Sandra Bullock in for a sequel and you got Willem Dafoe as your follow-up to Dennis Hopper as your main villain. Like, that is really impressive as like a casting, and like sets you up with a good foundation for a sequel. And yet they still totally botched it because A, the Keanu Reeves replacement was Jason Patrick, who I don't know if he's been in anything else I've ever seen. Not exactly, you know, you couldn't get like a better person to fill in for the loss of Keanu. Just a tough one. And then you have, of course, the vehicle they're on is a boat at sea, which a little bit less thrilling than a bus going through heavily congested Los Angeles. So let's dive in here, Katie. I have quotes from Rasheed Wallace and Speed 2 Cruise Control here. I will run through them and you just have to guess who said them, and then we'll go from there. I have, I think, 11 quotes here, so we'll see how you do. Are you ready to play Sheed or Speed 2 Cruise Control?
Yes, I think so.
All right, quote number one for you. Quote, look, I'm not a water expert. I'm not a scientist.
Actually, I think that's Rasheed.
That is correct. That is Rasheed Wallace talking about the Flint water crisis, yeah. And not anyone on the ship in Speed 2 Cruise Control. Very good guess, Katie. You got one already on the board. You're always better at these games, and I think like the difficulty I've set is going to allow for. But hey, you're very talented. Here we go. Question number two. I've been in worse situations than this, and panic does not help. Trust me.
That's Speed 2.
The most important thing is just for everybody just to stay calm.
You don't even work on this ship.
Oh God, I've been in worse situations than this, and panicking does not help. Trust me. Okay, we have our life vest.
That is Sandra Bullock, Annie from Speed 2 Cruise Control. Of course, I thought maybe there was some basketball-y sort of tropes in there.
She never panics.
Well, I think he was telling people not to panic. Maybe it was like this a tough loss in a game six.
I don't even think he'd humor it.
My thinking was are you guys panicked after falling down 3-2 to X team? And then that would be his reply. But hey, didn't work out that way. That's all right. Next question here. Who's ready to party on the big boat besides me?
this is a good trick. Explicit mention of boats. I'll say Sheed.
It is not Sheed. Oh. It is Annie from Speed 2. Sandy B getting ready to party on the big boat, but I'm very satisfied that I have that. That I got you with that one.
So who's ready to partay on the big boat besides me?
All right, next one here. What are you going to do? Are you going to let the air out of the tires?
That's Speed 2.
Stop the ship. I want to slow it down.
What are you going to do? Are you going to let the air out of her tires? What are these buttons? What are these switches?
Don't you touch them. That is a character named Merced from Speed 2 talking to Jason Patrick as Jason Patrick says, I'm going to slow this damn thing down. And they say, how are you going to do that? Let the air out of the tires? And they didn't slow it down. You're correct. You get the point there. You are, what are you? You got 3 points out of four. You're still crushing it here, Katie. We carry on to the next one. The only way that patch is going to help me is if I roll it and smoke it.
Huh. A patch. Is this about being addicted to cigs? Is this Speed?
I'll take a Camel unfiltered.
Honey, aren't you wearing the nicotine patch?
The only way that patch is going to help me is if I roll it and smoke it.
Good evening.
This is Speed. This is a character named Constance talking about, didn't want to take a nicotine patch. And I thought maybe, you know, I think she likes to have some of the green once in a while. But no, you're correct. That is Speed. You're 4 for 5, Katie. You're crushing it so far. All right. Next one here. Quote, I only know one Speed.
Is this Rashid?
This is Rashid Wallace. This is correct. Damn it. He has some really, really good quotes for this, I will say. Some very good ones, considering the subject matter he's being compared to. All right, let's go to the next one here. Here we go. Quote, time for group therapy, boys. I wouldn't trade you for all the pearls and diamonds in the world.
That's got to be Speed.
Time for group therapy, boys. I wouldn't trade you for all the darkness in the world.
That is John Geiger, played by Willem Dafoe in Speed 2. This is before he kills everybody, I think, in like the cabin or whatever. He's pretty messed up in this movie, as I recall. He also, I don't want to say that just yet because I don't know if I have a quote that's tied to it. No, I don't. In that movie, a character trope of his is he has like copper poisoning in his blood of some kind, and he puts leeches on his body just to get the copper out. He just is walking around being a villain, putting leeches on his bare nipples to get the copper out of his body while being a supervillain. It's quite a choice. All right, the next one here. Quote, everybody needs help, even Superman. That's why they had the Justice League.
This is tentative, but not 100% confident about this, but I'll say Sheed.
That is Rashid Wallace. Man, Katie, you're just cruising through here. It's unbelievable. that was Sheed talking about how he couldn't carry the team by himself. We got two quotes left, Katie, and you are currently 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of 7. Wait, did I only have 9 quotes? I'm bad at counting, apparently. Either way, we only have 9 quotes, Katie. You're 6 out of 7. Next one here. Quote, if it was true that I just cared about the money, then my whole attitude would be different.
This is a kind of a heist movie.
I would argue very much a heist movie.
Rashid was very much maligned in his time. I'll say Speed.
That's incorrect. It was Rashid Wallace. I got you with the probably grander vision of Willem Dafoe's plot at stake in this quote. But no, you're incorrect. So now I was wrong. There are 10 quotes here. Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You have gotten only 2 wrong. So you are 7 of 9 going into the final quote. And it is, quote, traditionally speaking, isn't it true that the captain goes down with the ship?
That's Speed.
Traditionally speaking, isn't it true that the captain goes down with the ship?
That is speed. I thought maybe there was going to be some kind of sports, cliche tied up in that one. But that is, of course, once again, John Geiger, Willem Dafoe's freak-ass villain from Speed 2 Cruise Control. If you have not seen Speed 2 Cruise Control, it's probably worth one watch just to, like, say that you've seen it and you can understand all of these quotes, I guess, these awesome references to smoking nicotine patches and whatnot. But that's it. That was quick, Katie. Speed 2 Cruise Control has concluded. And with that, we will move into the final thing we do on each episode of the show, the posters of the week, the best in NBA social media from the last 7 days. And Katie, today I'm going with a dear pal, Amir Johnson.
Damn it.
Amir. Did you take Amir too?
Yeah.
No.
It's okay. I have a backup, of course.
Did we do the same one where he's with his family in front of Mater from Cars in the lobby?
Only one, I think, taking his family to Disney World.
Yep. Watch this movie Cars 10 million watch times, this literally. Car movies. Yep. Rasheed Wallace is my poster of the week, and I always feel good when I pick the same as you without us conferring beforehand, because it means I have good taste, because Katie, you always have the best picks here. All right, well, who's your poster of the week?
So it was gonna be Rasheed, because I thought those picks were really cute, like just a really he looked like he was having a good time.
You mean Amir? You said that you did the Sheed thing too.
Amir. And
Sheed on the brain.
My backup, I saw that it looks like, it looks like Jaren Jackson Jr. is at home and he either has a gardener or has taken like part in some gardening, because he posted a video kind of like scanning his front garden, like area of his driveway.
Those
of us in the biz refer to as annuals. Oh wait, I'm fucking that up. Whatever, the ones that you have to plant again and again.
Are annuals.
I think
perennials are the other ones that stay in there all the time.
Yeah. So some new annuals. Because also the spacing is like very precise, and he just wrote beauty. So I was like, that's cool if he's getting into gardening, or even if he's just very appreciative of the job someone did on his garden. I thought that was nice.
I like the idea of in Memphis in the locker room somewhere, Marc Gasol having stashed a little pocketbook full of all of his gardening secrets that perhaps Jaren Jackson Jr. found under a chair or in the back of a locker and just was like, what is this? This is unbelievable. I'm going to take all of this knowledge and put it into my own day-to-day. And that's how he became a gardener. And then someday down the line, Jaren Jackson will hide the same pocketbook, and some other enterprising young gardener on the Memphis Grizzlies will discover it. Do you think that's what happened here, Katie?
I'd like to think that. I do like to think that.
Yeah, I hope he does that just wherever he goes, just leaves his Marc Gasol walking around Spain, just dropping off little notes on how to properly care for a dahlia plant or something like that. We love Marc Gasol. Second straight Marc Gasol reference on the podcast this week. All right, Katie, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. Thank you so much for tuning in and for supporting us. We have a Patreon episode that came out last week. You can go and check as we talked about our dream vacations centered around basketball. That's where Marc Gasol came up. So it wasn't on the mainline episode we talked about Gasol, if you're confused. So go and check that out. Please join our Patreon page. It's $4 US, $5.50 Canadian a month to be part of our Patreon community. You get into our Discord chat, you can ask us mailbag questions, and you get those monthly mailbag episodes or just general interest episodes for free. You can go and check those. They're not for free. You're paying for them. We thank you very much in advance. Katie, anything you'd like to promote?
I will promote the series that we both alluded to, which is called Small Screens, that I'm writing on Dime, about the NBA Finals, recapping every game as if it were an episode of a television show.
outstanding. Highly recommend you go and check it out. I'm not much of a TV person anymore, but this really makes me like TV. it's a very good read, and everyone should go check out each and every version of Small Screens throughout the NBA Finals. We'll be back again next week, of course. In the meantime, you can check me out at Locked On Raptors every day, talking Raptors in the offseason. And I think on today's show, we'll be talking about Rudy Gobert. And this, we're recording this on Tuesday. So 2 days ago, we talked about Rudy Gobert. When you hear this, if you want to go
gotta
check
that
out.
Raptors worm strong.
Hell yeah. Just always refining, feeding the worm, if you will. And yeah, you can also go check out the Canadian Elite Basketball League, which I do a weekly show for called CEBL Weekly. It's on the YouTube channel for the CEBL. And you can also watch me and listen to me do play-by-play. I have like 4 games over the course of the next week. So go check them out. They're a lot of fun. And those games are excellent. And there's lots of talent and former NBA guys and future NBA guys and everything in between. So go and check out the Canadian Elite Basketball League. Until next week, I'm Sean. That's Katie. It's been a slice. We'll talk to you again on Thursday with another episode of Basketball. Bye-bye.